Hello, everyone. This is Adam Meister, the Bitcoin Meister, the Disrupt Meister. Welcome to This Week in Bitcoin and Beyond. Today is September the 6th of 1995. What were you doing? 2023. What was going on? 1995 on this day. Strong hand, long-term thinking. Bitcoin is the next Bitcoin. We're getting some feedback there somewhere. Road to the six-digit realm. Bitcoin always returns to its all-time high. Be a unique beast. I'm offended by sound. We've got some unique beast here today. Hello, my elite friends. It's the same panel as last This Week in Bitcoin and Beyond show. We got Dr. Ransom coming out from Texas. We got Andy Hoffman in Deion Sanders land in Colorado. And we got Ulrich in Southern California, where the Baltimore Orioles are playing right now. They were also playing the Angels in 1995. I don't know if you got back. You guys got a mute when you're done. That might be a good idea. So let us start off. We're gonna run a pound that like button, check out the notes section below. And get some good links there. Don't worry. Hopefully that feedback will end. We're gonna start though with Ulrich. We're talking about weird noise. Let's talk about some noise in the Bitcoin space. And that, why do people keep on talking about my conclusion on SBF is this: who gives a darn? Why do people keep bringing this up? Why is this even do you think this is just noise or just like an 80% or thing to get people just to get clicks? I mean, is it just total clickbait? I don't want to hear a thing about the dude anymore. But every day I like read one of these mainstream publications, they're talking about SBF still. Your thoughts real quick. Ulrich, baby.
Oh, we're having all kinds of issues. I'm sorry. Yeah, I didn't even know Sam Bankman-Fried was in the news. I must be buried in my work, and of course, a good signal. I would say that SBF is the venture capitalist, the traditional finance, the traditional banker injection into this. Into this sphere, this crypto Bitcoin sphere. And the reason why is because there's not a use case for the mainstream financial segment unless they can grift upon the earning potential and the hard work of the masses. So they will sell people affinity scams. They will sell people basically lies, vaporware for the sake of saying this is the next Bitcoin, this is the next big thing, you're going to get rich, trust me bro. So in my opinion, the media propaganda is so loud that people can't really, they don't have the time or the energy or the wherewithal to do good honest research and those types of things. Again, when there's something beautiful and when there's something that's multi-generational impactful like the Bitcoin network, there's going to be a lot of things that will try to get in the way, try to ride its coattails in order to take value away from it. But people have to be stoic, people have to be austere, and if you don't do your research, you're going to get left behind.
Well, yeah, so it's a distraction, people. Don't even engage in it. I didn't put it in my title. I think people just use this clickbait. I think it's never going to end, analyzing every little aspect of the upcoming trial, what he's doing in jail. It keeps coming up. Signal to noise ratio, it's all noise. But you talked about distractions. And at the very end, we'll get into this side chain, drive chain thing. But now, I promised everyone a little personal question at first here. So we talked about noise. So this one, we don't need to talk about SBF anymore. I don't need to hear the other guys' take on it. This one's just for Vance. Since the last time we spoke, Vance, have you done any more Bitcoin research? Has anything changed in your Bitcoin life, or is it just the same? been busy.
Hey, Adam, it's good to be with you and Andy and Ulrich. And yeah, I mean, I've been continuing to look into it, continuing my research, finding new ways, continuing to find out that, you know, hey, look, the federal government's going to keep spending. You know, they're running out of money at the end of this month. They've only their continuing resolution that they did earlier this year runs out at the end of this month. So we have another debt, or not a debt showdown, but a budget showdown that's going on. Maybe they will shut down for a little while. It probably won't. But this gives more reason for us to be talking about Bitcoin. And competitive currencies, in particular Bitcoin, right? And finding ways to make sure that you are hedging your bets for the crisis that's already here, if not going to get worse soon. So I think we've got a lot to talk about.
Now, I want to remind everyone to pound that freaking like button, but the Dr. Vance Ginn here, he is from outside of our little circle of Bitcoiners, okay? He's out there in the mainstream. You just had a great article out there that we're going to talk about empowerment accounts. What was that? What publication was that in? It's linked to below, by the way.
That's in the Daily Caller. I had that out on Labor Day.
Yeah. So this dude, I mean, he's way beyond Bitcoin here, but he's a smart dude. He's worked for the Trump administration before, and getting guys like this, getting their perspective, but getting them onto the Bitcoin train is good in the long term here. All right, now Andy's special question. You noticed, Andy, that the volatility in Bitcoin, there hasn't been too much volatility lately. I do want to ask you something I've forgotten to bring up over all the shows that I've done this summer. Do you think the bull market has begun since we doubled the 15? We got up to 31K at one point, so we doubled that old that low. So has the bull market silently begun, just like in 2019 when it silently begun? But also volatility stuff too. You commented to me on the over DM. So take it away, Andy.
We all keep forgetting to unmute.
I hit the wrong button. I hit the button that makes us all come here. No, I was going to say about Sam Bankman-Fried. He's a second-rate criminal, and that's why he was taken out by a first-rate criminal. It's when the first-rate criminal, CZ, gets taken out, that's when we're going to have big news. And as far as Vance, yes, you have the opportunity of a lifetime. I said it a month ago. I say it more now. We are now 7 months from the halving, and as you said, the world is falling apart. There's going to be a massive move into Bitcoin sometime on the horizon, maybe in the next year, maybe sooner, with some of these things that we're talking about. And, you know, this thing with the volatility Adam's talking about, I mean, Ulrich, you know that, Adam, we all know this. I've never seen anything like it. I think it's very bullish because I saw that the amount of Bitcoin that's dormant is at an all-time high, and the amount that's being hodled is at an all-time high. The hash rate's sitting near its all-time high. The difficulty just hit an all-time high. And of course, there's no one selling. There's games being played. As you know, I believe 100% that Binance is the primary reason that Bitcoin price doesn't move up higher, but Binance will not be a factor forever. And, it's just amazing for me to watch Bitcoin completely decouple from markets and just bide its time. Vance, do your work and do it quickly, because we'll be looking up in 12, 18 months at new all-time highs. And, you know, you can get a lot of important people and influential people to make money and save their lives.
So, Andy, has the bull market begun silently?
Yeah, well, you said when it doubles, right? And it barely doubled, so it's a bull market.
Pound that like button. Hey, everybody, Big Sean Harris is in the chat. You guys can do the super chat. Get my attention. We only need 60-some more dollars to do a new one Bitcoin show. That's when I do my own special little show. We haven't had one of those for a little while, but we've been doing this week in Bitcoin. By the way, all these guys are linked to below. And I know, Ulrich, I haven't had time to watch this show, but you were going to – you and Q picked the best all-time NBA player. I hope it's Michael Jordan. I mean, I think Andy.
Of course it is.
Yeah, Andy, like if you followed it in the 90s, you would automatically think Michael Jordan. So like when I see that thing, I'm like, it's got to be Michael Jordan. But I'm not going to spoil anything. Watch it. Everyone's got a different perspective on who the
Ulrich, is it not Michael Jordan? Is it someone else? Is it Jokic?
People should watch the show. Again, he's linked to below.
Okay, we'll have to watch. Got it.
Watch the show. I
mean, it was so. If you were aware in 1998, I mean, there was no question in your mind. Like, this is the best. I mean, all the hype, all that. I mean, there would never be a question. Of course, that guy's the best one guy. And I don't even like basketball, but like, you could ask anybody in the United States, and they go, "Yeah, that guy there in Chicago is the best one, the best player." Okay, that was a distraction. Pal, we're not supposed to be talking about. Let's get back. You never know, though. We get a very guys know about all sorts of subject matter here. So let's move to Vance and something that you actually talked about in your tweets, and that you said mandates and shutdowns were once considered helpful by some. Eventually everybody realized that they were insane. So I want to ask everybody, including Vance, we'll start with Vance. And why is this coming up? Is this just a power grab by the government? Why are masks and all this stuff being talked about again now? And I mean, it is so bad for the economy.
Right.
It is so unnatural. Andy, you're going to think your thing. It's coming from yours. Yeah. So coming up.
I'm sorry, I just missed the question. It was a little feedback.
Mute. You got to mute yourself. There's no question. I said you got to mute yourself. That's all. All right, cool. Take it away, Vance.
No, I was talking about that because we are hearing more about shutdowns, mask mandates, even in Texas where I live, some of the schools, I think there's three schools that are mandating masks now. A couple schools shut down. And part of it was because they didn't have enough staff, but it's like, okay, did you not learn from the mistakes of the past to have people on call who will come and work and do things? I mean, you should have learned from that situation to not have this happen in the future. And unfortunately we don't, right? It just keeps repeating the same mistakes that we've made in the past. When we've learned that the cloth masks don't really do anything, even other masks are making the situation worse in many cases as you're bringing it into your house. The shutdowns, you're not outside in the open, you're more enclosed in an area, so you're a lot more likely to get everyone else infected in the process. And you know, one of the things that was looked at early on for at least the assumed reason for the shutdowns and, you know, the 15 days to stop the spread was about the hospitalizations, right? Like the hospitals were going to be overrun, they were going to have enough beds. But if you look at the hospitalizations right now, they're not very high at all. And in fact, the cases are just like a little blip up. So this indicates to me that something else is going on. Like you said, maybe a power grab, control. We're getting closer to an election. And so there's probably something else that's going to happen between now and the election time. So we've got to look out for that. But I think we've got to learn from our mistakes. You know, yes, if you're immunocompromised or something else, then you need to take certain actions. You know, otherwise, I think we just need to keep going and live our lives. And instead of shutting things down and forcing us all inside and making the situation worse, that just can't happen again. We've never got to let that happen again. And unfortunately, many states have, you know, banned mask mandates, you know, have banned vaccine mandates and stuff like that, because this should be about liberty, individual choice, and instead of getting politicians and bureaucrats so much control.
Let me tell you something here. I think that a lot of people will accept this stuff again. But there's going to be a percentage of the population is going to, if this is brought on, it's suggested by the government again, there are going to be some pretty angry people this time. I don't know what, it's just power is just, some people just lust over power. I think that's what this comes to, because it doesn't help anyone. It really is bad for the economy. The people that are in the tech economy are going to get wealthier and wealthier. I am going to get wealthier again if they do this, okay? It is the regular people, and people say they care about wealth inequality. I don't care about wealth inequality. It will only broaden the wealth inequality again if this actually happens. So I don't know how this story is going to end. It is just so, to me, it is surreal that it is even being suggested. I am outside every day. The world is beautiful. No one is sick. People want to live in this sick, protective blanket, government, protect me world. They are addicted to it. It's a very large percentage of the population. It's really pathetic that some people are that dependent. But hey, and we're going to talk about a government dependency in terms of welfare programs in a second. But I do want to get real quick the other panel members' take on, because I'm sure in your states you've been hearing them talk about this stuff too. And when I say them, it might be mostly just the media, just to get clicks and stuff. Okay, I don't know. I think it'd be, in certain states, it'd be very bold for a government person to suggest such a thing because they might lose their job. Andy, your take on possible mask mandates again and all of this nonsense.
Well, it all comes down to, you know, you'd say the government dependency, and they can't depend on it anymore. So I don't really care about mask mandates. They can do whatever they want. I think the government can't protect people anymore. And that's why we're seeing interest rates go up. They can't get it back down. And interest rates going up destroys everything, right, Vance? It destroys the government. It destroys the consumers. It destroys corporations. And ultimately, it's going to destroy the currency because we're going to have inflation that can't be contained. So, you know, I think the government is slowly losing its grip because they don't have the power to print money anymore. And it's just so funny. Like, you had this, you know, rates went up and then they had a brief move down because everyone had this knee jerk that they're, oh, the Fed's going to turn the printing presses on and cut rates. They can't. The second the Fed says this time around, we're going to cut rates. We're going to do QE. You'll see real inflation. I mean, serious inflation. And what you just saw yesterday with Russia and Saudi Arabia, now they're cutting production while we sold all of our SPR off. And I mean, we have no more options left. So I think you are right. You're going to have a lot of angry people, and the government will not have the power to help them. And it's a scary thing. It's like the end of Atlas Shrugged.
Well, this is the thing. I you bring up, it's great that you brought up inflation when we're talking about this, because I think some logical 20%ers will say it's just a way to distract people from inflation. To get them just all worked out about masks and this, to get in arguments about masks and vaccines. People only have so much time. And to make that the big political issue instead of inflation, I think it's good for certain people. It's terrible for America.
But why they were able to get away with the mask mandates is because they were giving so much stimulus. And it gets like Pavlovian. Okay, we'll wear our mask, but you're giving us all this money, lowering rates to nothing. But they can't do that now. There's no money left to give. Like Vince says, they're going to run out next week. I mean, we just hit $32 trillion on the national debt. What was it, like a month ago? And we're going to hit $33 probably next week. And there's no more money to print, and there's no more rates to cut. So no one's going to listen to mask mandates. First of all, they're up in arms about something like that to start with. But I don't know what else the government has left to do, to be honest with you.
All right. Ulrich, your take on this. Why is it happening now? Why? I mean, it's beautiful suburb. People are worried about being sick. Certain people are worried. Take it away, Ulrich. Your take.
Again, I have to keep on the unmute. Sorry. But the cyclical psyop of mass and COVID seem to always be raised when the powers that be need the population be scared and, like, you know, ready for some form of marching order. You know, I don't want to be too conspiratorial, but, you know, I think this ensures authoritative ability to kind of like make whatever decree necessary with minimal resistance. You think about, I think Vance mentioned the upcoming elections. Now mail-in ballots become more necessary to preserve democracy. So then mail-in ballots are a little more likely to be, or a little more able to be fudged if they have to go down that route. And some people thought that it did happen in 2020. Live testing of prototype injections on healthy individuals. You know, I mean, me being a basketball aficionado, I remember seeing the COVID stance from the liberal woke NBA. And I remember seeing Kevin Durant get COVID four times. It didn't seem to hurt his ability to perform that much. He was out back scoring 30 points a game. So healthy individuals, which are a large chunk of the population, not everyone as we get into this less and less healthy world, but like, why are we forcing those people to be inoculated with the experimental vaccine? It'll be interesting to see how people buy into it. I kind of agree with you guys. Andy said, without a stimulus incentive, people will say, well, why should we listen to the government? You're essentially not paying us to stay idle. But the coast will be in full willing participation, in my opinion. I live in Southern California, and I think there's a lot of people, millennials, Gen Zers all the way to baby boomers, who can't wait to participate in the mask mandate. I've seen people walking around with masks this whole time since we've been in a lull of COVID. People driving in their cars with masks and face shields as I go to work. It's really comical. But the majority will absolutely hate anyone with a perspective of life different from the mainstream media, which you see in Disney, Fox, Comcast, New York Times. If you don't buy into that, you're essentially an alien to them.
All right, dudes. If you haven't left a state where you think this might happen, don't complain too much. I know. I'm sorry, man. I know you love California and everything, but you're ready. I mean, you're ready. You're a realist.
I live in a nice little hamlet. We call this the nickname for the city I live in is Mayberry from the Andy Griffith Show. So
what's funny, Ulrich? You just talked about how everyone wants to be. What'd you say? Fox, Paramount, and New York Times. Like, aren't the ratings on all three of the? Oh, Disney, you said. All those are all-time lows. Disney. I tweeted yesterday. It took two lifetimes, but they jumped the shark, and that's it for Disney. And New York Times, I don't know that anyone reads it anymore. And Fox News, I don't even know that it's on TV anymore. So, I mean, this is what that people are supposedly following.
Don't tell people in LA that they're still watching.
New York Times has a niche market of
New Yorkers.
And New Yorkers who used to live in New York.
Like my dad. Yeah, I get it.
I mean, they've got a loyal following and sadly, most of those people will do whatever the federal government tells them to do. It's quite an overlap between those two groups. Let's move on to Vance and your article about empowerment accounts.
Yeah.
And I wanted to quickly just give my little summary to it.
Please.
I think the whole welfare system is really complicated. And part of the reason it stays complicated is so all the bureaucrats can have their jobs at their various different organizations. So you give a solution that simplifies the whole thing. And I don't think bureaucrats are going to give that up very easily. But it almost seemed like it's what empowerment accounts are just UBI based on some requirements. Like, you'll get more UBI if you actually apply for a job or you actually show that you're working. So, maybe refute that a little bit. Is it just a little bit more complex UBI? I just want to say UBI is better than the current welfare system. If everyone just got one check instead of having all those bureaucracies, it would be better. Yeah. But what are empowerment accounts? I never actually heard of them.
Yeah. So it's something that I've been working on for the last couple of years, published a paper on and then had a piece out in the Daily Caller on Monday, basically highlighting that we've spent all this money. We've spent about $25 trillion in inflation adjusted dollars since 1965 on the war on poverty. And, you know, what good is it? Now, there are, you know, if you still see about 12-13% of the population is in poverty, the way they calculate it. If you use actual transfer payments of how much money they're getting from us, the taxpayer, through government, right? It goes down to about 2.5%. Senator Phil Graham has a good book called The Myth of Inequality, where he kind of goes through this and talks about the problems with a lot of these data that are out there now. But the issue is that still accounts all the transfer payments. So are we getting out what we really want from all these taxpayer dollars being taken, right? Taxation is theft, to give to people. And then a lot of it's printed away, right? In the Fed, put that in there as well. But whenever you have this situation in place, what my thought was is, how can we improve, streamline this process and reduce a lot of the benefits cliffs, where when people get a little more income, then they just lose all that money. They actually oftentimes lose more money in benefits, transfer payments, than they do than the income they receive. And so that makes it less incentive for them to do what? To work. And really what we need is more people working and allowing for them to save for the future, gaining productivity and all those things. And so within this system of like 80 different federal programs that are out there, one step in the right direction, in my view, would be empowerment account, which is basically just a debit card that they would get where it would streamline a lot of these programs. Let's say temporary assistance to needy families, TANF, SNAP, which are food stamps, put those in a housing voucher, put that in one card instead of having multiple programs. You can streamline it. You can reduce the bureaucratic cost and waste because only about 60 cents of every dollar actually goes to the people you're trying to help. It goes to everything else. It's siphoned off in the process. And then two, it's a work requirement. So you've got to either work or get some education or training. So that way it's setting you up for the future. But it's not a UBI. UBI is different. Milton Friedman, Frederick Hayek, two of my favorite economists, they were in favor of a UBI, but only if you eliminated all the other welfare programs. Well, that's unlikely to happen. I would love to see that be the case, right? Because I don't think that we need this either. In my piece, I talk about we need a flourishing economy where we have the economy working and everybody else, they can work. We can depend on each other and communities and families instead of the government being the first line of defense. It needs to be the last line of defense. And too often we make it the first line. And so long story short, the empowerment account is a way to streamline the programs, I think reduce the cost of these over time and give a way for people to get out of poverty. The programs today basically just build generational cycles of poverty. They trap people in poverty. We need something that's going to help uplift them in some way without bringing up too much government in the process. So I'd love to get y'all's thoughts, though.
Bitcoin, that's what we need. Okay. That answers all of those, checks all those boxes.
Yeah, but the only problem is we're so far away from that on a federal level here. These bureaucracies, I agree with the streamlining of the process. I just, the bureaucracies are so entrenched. I mean, they're basically welfare programs themselves. The people working at them, they wouldn't have jobs without all this extra bureaucracy. So, I do kind of see your what you propose as a step toward UBI, Vance. I mean. Would you agree that it could be interpreted that way?
I think you could interpret that way, but a UBI is for everyone. Like all of us could get $10,000 a year or something. This is only for people who are currently eligible for welfare programs. Talk about whether or not they should all be eligible and everything else, but this is only for a segment of the population. It's not for everyone because I don't need a check. I don't want you taking out of money in one pocket and giving me another check in the other pocket. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. I do like the name you picked for it. It's so politically correct and will make people empowerment. Just use that word, empowerment. All right, Andy, since you're not muted, do you have any more thoughts on this?
I was just saying the news that just came out.
We're gonna do that in a second. Gotcha.
No, that's Vance's bailiwick. But it's funny because when he's saying this is what we need, the less government, we need something that empowers people. And I'm like, yeah, that's what Bitcoin is. And so to me, anything the government does will fail, and will cost money and will cause inflation and will be a net negative on society. I just focus forward on Bitcoin and, everything else is noise to me.
Yes. All right. Ulrich, your take on that empowerment accounts.
Yeah, I think that we have to find, we're not going to get away from government services overnight. So any way to make them more efficient, more streamlined is a win. I used to work for the federal government, Department of Defense. They're still my company's number one customer. So I see the waste on a regular basis. It has to fix some way. And, these types of, you don't know how much waste and yellow tape and bureaucracy is there unless you study it, unless you're sitting there and you see that for every, like what Andy said, Vance said 60% efficiency when it comes down to helping the people that you actually intend with these services. So we have a segment of the population who's so saying we need these services, but the government is not incentivized to make those services efficient because they have no competition. They are monopolizing that institution. So if they're going to monopolize it, you can only hope that people are altruistic and willing to find ways to make it more efficient. But again, when it comes down to nonprofit organizations, they define their success by how many people they have under them. So if you can have your own agency, doesn't matter how wasteful it is, because the government prints its own money, creates its own legitimacy. You're fighting against that baked in incentive, which is irrational at best. But I would hope that, you know, Vance, your solution sounds great.
Hey man, he's in motion. I give you all the credit in the world. Do what you're trying to do in Texas. And we're going to talk about Texas and taxes real soon. But Andy has some breaking news. So Andy, share the breaking news.
Yeah, seen the article. It's just, it's a Bloomberg headline that it says MicroStrategy / crypto companies have won fair value accounting. I'm not even sure where the ruling was, but this is a very big deal. This was Michael Saylor's, one of his pet projects. And as we know, Michael Saylor always wins, and he won again. He basically is saying that a lot of the public corporations don't want to buy Bitcoin because of these insane accounting rules, more kind of SEC type stuff, where it's just, creating obstacles by saying, well, if Bitcoin falls in your balance sheet, you have to mark it down. But if it goes up, you can't mark it back up, as if it's like a permanent decline. And he's been fighting for this now, I guess it's 2 years, and he won it. So, well, one, he's going to get to mark up his balance sheet, since probably valuing his $3 billion of Bitcoin at $15,000. And it's going to look, I mean, anyone who's on Wall Street understands that it's not really a major issue. We can all decipher what a balance sheet is, but it is very confusing, especially for the average person. And it's definitely a big win for, I won't say crypto companies. There's no such thing as crypto. It's all scams. It's for Bitcoin companies and Bitcoin holders. It's a big win.
It is good news getting rid of that ridiculous obstacle. It's an obstacle. And that's what the SEC and all these regulatory agents, get out of the way. So it's a get out of the way move. Okay. Yeah, it's a positive.
And on that note, again, you know, we've been saying forever, of course, you know, like a Bitcoin ETF, of course it's inevitable. They do it everywhere else. And, you know, it's just the government, all these people, you talk about Elizabeth Warren or the SEC, they're all basically U.S. government protecting their dollar franchise, and they're losing. They lost to the BRICS just now. They're losing to OPEC, and now they're losing to the weight of public opinion. That's why, heck, even Ripple won a freaking lawsuit case, let alone the Grayscale win, and now this. And, you know, and we'll look up, I mean, any minute we'll look up and there will be an ETF, and then there'll be 20 ETFs, and that'll be another million Bitcoin will be taken off the market. There's only about a million left on the market, or 2 million left. So it's just a matter of time. The weight of public opinion moves toward Bitcoin.
That was a good segue into the ETF news that we haven't covered yet, because we were away when it happened, that Grayscale won a case. So now they can be considered for an ETF. I mean, some people thought, oh, they got an ETF. No, they didn't get an ETF yet. It's going to happen one day, dudes. That was a positive step, but it was a little, you know, Grayscale was a special example, because they weren't even allowed to apply, and now they are. And it's just, okay, great. Right. It's going to happen one day, the ETF. That's my take on it. And by the way, Andy, mute yourself too, because you're giving us some feedback when you're not muted. I do want to ask, from an outsider's perspective, you know, what we've just discussed about the SEC and these regulations, Dr. Vanskin, what is your take on this kind of thing? Accounting rules and waiting years for ETFs to be approved. Yeah. Your whole take. I don't think the SEC is necessary at all. I mean, I've stated this many times, but
I believe the market works best. You know, why do you need government to come in and try to screw things up in the process? Because that's what they end up doing. I think you need things to get to the market. And if Bitcoin wants to provide ETF and others, let's let them do it and see what wins out at the end of the day. I was just looking at Bitcoin prices, moving a little bit, but not too much so far. from some of this news. But you know, yeah, I think SEC, you know, a lot of the stuff that goes on there, it's overdone. It takes a long time throughout these processes. You got court cases and everything else that's going on that really hinders the prosperity that otherwise could be provided. And, you know, I think last time we talked about some antitrust, you know, I think antitrust rules and laws are do the same thing. They hinder the progress that could otherwise be happening because of the competition that could take place in the market instead of government coming in and trying to infiltrate what they're doing, whether that's in the financial sector or elsewhere. And so this is just another opportunity that I hope, you know, Bitcoin and Bitcoin will really profit from because this gives them more opportunity to be in the marketplace.
Yeah, the government can weaponize these things. We're going to talk about government weaponization very soon, by the way. Stay tuned. Ulrich, your take on the breaking news.
I think the accounting principle going away from the traditional GAAP principle or at least modifying it is something necessary. Bitcoin wasn't around when that practice was instituted, and it does make sense. You know, it was irrational to begin with, but these are the tiny things that won't be really noticed in the market. Right away, MicroStrategy stock hasn't moved today because of that, even though that was one of their chief platforms for years. But it's sort of undercover because the most blatant thing is Michael Saylor bought the dip, and so it's like it makes waves. I don't think it's going to impact the price immediately, but when they have their quarterly reports and they're able to reward themselves for hodling and being true to their convictions every quarter, and it says, hey, we have this amount of Bitcoin, it's worth this money, this many dollars, they're going to be rewarded properly. So that's a good thing.
The clarification that it provides will encourage other entities to buy in now that maybe were uncomfortable beforehand. I think other
that is true.
And don't forget, in the case of MicroStrategy, who, you know, they sell equity, they sell debt to buy Bitcoin. Well, this enables their balance sheet to be a lot stronger. They have a lot more collateral, and they have a lot more negotiating power in the ability to raise capital to buy more Bitcoin. And don't forget, they still have a $750 million shelf offering just waiting to pull the trigger on. This may well be a catalyst they've been waiting for to get it done. I have no doubt he can get it done anytime he wants. He's just biding his time. That's a lot of Bitcoin. All it takes is one. There's only about a million or so Bitcoin that's even available for sale, if you could even call it that. That's how tight the market is.
Yes. Well, we will see how this develops. I think it is an important story too. But we'll go because it's not, I guess it's not that flashy. The 80%ers will ignore it, but it is. On a base level, is quite important. Getting rid of making things easier to get Bitcoin, the whole Bitcoin.
We had that and the Grayscale ruling within a week, right? And by the way, everyone talks so much about BlackRock. Grayscale is a much bigger deal than BlackRock when it comes to ETF. They have 500,000 or 600,000 Bitcoin. I mean, this will be. There's no way, if they both get approved, that BlackRock has a chance at ever becoming what the Grayscale. And I'll bet you Grayscale will rename themselves, by the way, or sell themselves to an even bigger entity like Fidelity. That's the fund that's going to matter, because it'll be massively liquid. I mean, with 600,000 Bitcoin in it already.
Really? That's a very, very good point there. Very good point. But the question is how, and this is what people have to be long-term thinkers about. It's not happening tomorrow, the approval of, and BlackRock will probably get approved before Grayscale does. It's just the way things work. I don't know about that
because think about the government just said that the SEC was capricious and arbitrary and lost a massive lawsuit to Grayscale. Grayscale is out today saying we are ready to do the ETF right now. And by the way, Grayscale knows a lot more about Bitcoin and Bitcoin custody and storage than BlackRock does. It would make no sense at all for them to win that case and then be told that BlackRock gets to go first. And by the way, BlackRock isn't even first online. There's many others ahead of them, all of whom understand this. So I think they're all going to be approved at once, to be honest.
But the federal government has its favorite. So, hey, I hope it helps.
They'll get sued again. They'll get sued again, and it'll be a big mess.
Yeah, but they take these suits. I mean, Biden, yeah. I mean, they've had these things where certain branches of the government declare, rent amnesty that have no jurisdiction over rent amnesty. I mean, it's crazy. And then they get sued, and then it takes a while, and then they lose. And we'll talk about weaponization of the dollar. It's a good segue, because the United States made a mistake at the beginning of the Russia-Ukraine war. I mean, they confiscated the Russians' dollars. I mean, they used it as a weapon of war. I mean, it was a choice, and I think it woke up some of these countries out there, like, we might be on their bad list one day. We want a way to transact where we don't have to go through the United States of America. And what the BRICS, the biggest deal that I think that comes out of BRICS is that, not that they're going to have their own currency, but they're just going to be, you know, if Argentina, South Africa want to do a deal, they're not going to have to worry about the dollar, United States sanctioning them. Okay. Now, I don't know how well they're going to be able to pull all this off, especially when they just added these six more countries. It seems like overkill. These countries are,
Look what Russia.
Ethiopia, where like 20%, only 20% of the people have access to toilets. I mean, it's a huge percentage of the population. But what I boil it down to is that they are just trying to, and they can pull this off, you know, just to avoid going through the United States when doing transactions. Okay, they're not going to come, because if they try to do their own currency, one of them is going to get it. Is going to be, someone's going to have to hold it. Someone's going to have the gold, hold the gold backing it. And you can't trust any of these countries. It's terrible how they'll backstab each other in 2 seconds. But if they get a network, you know, I mean, like Iran is sanctioned. So now they've got a way to like deal with these other big countries and not to worry about the United States cutting them off and doing whatever. So I guess I will start with Ulrich on this. Your take on BRICS, what did it mean to you?
Yeah, for sure. The weaponized dollar may have accelerated the BRICS economic bloc, in my opinion. I think that, but it was coming no matter what. So when they cut off Russia, sort of like how when COVID, when we printed a bunch of money to prop up the economy, that was already happening over decades, over years, but it accelerated in a snap, if you will. So the same thing with the Russia being cut off from SWIFT. And so now China and Russia are scrambling. It's like, hey, we can do this now. We have the incentive to do it now. But at the same time, China and Russia, they're really too powerful not to try this anyway. They're too big not to try this anyways at some point in time. And it's good for competition when it comes down to global reserve currency. We shouldn't have a monopoly for what with one currency to essentially cover, mandate and govern all economic activity. But at the same time, Russia, China, India, they're it's good horizontally, but vertically with these countries to their constituents, it's very oppressive. They have these, there's literally no economic liberty at all. In fact, I was looking up a metric where just from the idea of having an alternative monetary exchange like Bitcoin or even crypto, that China and Russia, they both are in the less than 0.1% of their population has Bitcoin. And that's, of course, China, that still means many, many millions because they're so big. But for Russia, it's like no individuals actually have custody of their keys there. They're essentially an oppressed oppressed people. So, I mean, this is
the reason why they won't adopt Bitcoin.
That's right.
Bitcoin is the easiest way around the dollar. But if they did it, it would empower the people. And then the dudes in charge would be they'd be gone. It would be great if they instead of doing this BRICS thing, they just had a Bitcoin coalition between all of them. It would be great because then they'd get rid of the trade would increase, the people would be free, but they need that totality. They need that control over the people. And it's really good that you brought up this aspect. And they're not all the BRICS nations aren't all the same, okay? But the three you brought up, India got rid of like cash randomly one day a few years ago. It was insane, the panic.
They said 30% taxation on any sort of crypto or Bitcoin profitability. So, or 30 or 40%, something atrocious at any time. There's no capital gains where you hold it for a little bit of time. They're really trying to push people away, disincentivize people from going outside their economy.
So yeah, the competition between systems. I think that's good. I think that's a positive to come. There's a competitor now. If you want to deal with Russia and India, deal with them. If you want to deal with the U.S., because they're going to eventually sanction someone they don't like. Either. I mean, who knows? It's still centrally controlled, but by someone. Bitcoin is the best option, but they'll never. That's not happening. Dr. Vansky, what is your take on the BRICS? What is your perspective?
Yeah, no, I think what you are saying is right, and there needs to be competition. The dollar has had a lot of power for a long time, and the way that we're running the system today with the national debt soaring to $33 trillion, interest rates going up, you know, about 30 to 40% of the national debt's going to be rolling over in the next 6 months, which means a lot of it's going to have higher interest rates because they're just going to roll over that debt, right? And so that's going to be even higher interest rates that's going to put downward pressure on the dollar, especially if BRICS and all those continue to sell off their dollar, which they're doing, they're de-dollarizing, if you will, then that's going to put downward pressure on the dollar. Gold prices up, probably Bitcoin prices up, and things of that nature. And at the end of the day, I mean, these other countries are having their own internal problems. China is running slower now. You know, they were shut down for so long. They're trying to come back up, but it's like it's not really working because the centralized planned economy, it just doesn't work very well. Russia is having their own problems. You know, you have OPEC with Russia and Saudi Arabia in particular saying they're going to continue to cut production or not increase production back to where it was before for oil production. And so oil prices jumped up above $90 a barrel, which we hadn't seen in at least a year, if not more, from the Brent crude price. The WTI, West Texas Intermediate crude oil, it's $86 today, but it was up closer to $90 yesterday. So that means higher gas prices, more things that are going to influence the consumer and employers across the country. And we're already in a fragile state that this could be what really breaks the back for Americans. Another thing I'd point out is savings are depleting quickly. With inflation and everything else, we had this huge spike in savings during all the handouts that were given out and people not really going anywhere. So they're just saving that money. That's being depleted quickly. And over the next month or two, all that excess savings is going to be depleted. It's going to be down to zero to where the savings rate now is right around 3%. We're going to be in a world of hurt. And when these student loans start being repaid starting next month, if that happens, maybe they'll delay it and find some other way to delay that nonsense. But that could be another amount. I think the average payment right now is over $300 a month. And so that's another hit to people's budgets that they probably haven't been prepared for a while. And so I think the stuff is going to hit the fan very soon. I've been saying this is a crisis already. I think with the federal government's insolvent. As you see them just rolling over debt with new debt, that's insolvency. And with interest rates soaring, we've got a lot of other problems, which is why you need Bitcoin. You need to think about what's happening in BRICS and others, because there's so much pressure with what's going on in, it's like a pressure cooker, right? The United States has been this pressure cooker for a while, and it's exploding inside, and we're seeing what's going to happen across the globe. And unfortunately, we have a weak administration, one that doesn't know one day the next what they're going to do. And so this is going to be a tough problem because there's been so much centrally planned economy here in the United States from the Fed and from the Biden administration and everyone else. We've really got to get back to free markets and capitalism and allow for people to flourish, you know, let people prosper, as I say.
Well, I say this, we all have the off-ramp into a place where we can all prosper, and that is Bitcoin. And you're a lot, I'm telling you, I watch all this stuff with popcorn because I know I'm good, man. My money's not going to get confiscated if I say something weird or if I don't wear a mask or whatever. So, I mean, that's what I'm a positive guy. Everybody knows that. Because there are people in the chat that says, oh, there's way too much worrying these days. Well, yeah, I think there is. I think that's what sells indeed. But if you are invested in the mainstream economy, in the normie economy, if you're a person who has to buy the biggest house, who has to consume, there's some stuff to worry about here. I mean, you got to toe the party freaking line. In Bitcoin land, it's freedom, baby. So, Andy, your take on BRICS? What's it mean?
Yeah, well, I think there's not enough worrying going on. But seriously, this BRICS it's monstrous news, and it's funny because for years everyone has talked about the BRICS in terms of, well, they want to have this alternative currency, and that's what they think of as BRICS, which is a joke. It's never going to happen. These five countries are all basket cases in their own right. And that includes China, which, as Van said, is now economically falling apart. So it's never been about a currency. And when they came together recently and they said, oh, well, we're going to have a gold-backed currency, I laugh at that even more. There's no such thing as a gold-backed currency. We don't even know who has gold. And frankly, gold is, as I've said, it's completely dead. It's just an industrial metal these days. What matters about this meeting last week, which was huge, was we talked about dollar weaponization. This is just anti-US weaponization. These guys have got together. They've had enough. Okay. Starting with Putin, I'm sure, who is more angry than anyone because we provoked this war, because we shut them off from SWIFT. We vilified them forever and done everything we can to destroy them. We've now vilified China. We vilified Saudi Arabia. Iran is part of this group. Okay. And what happens 2 weeks after this announcement, Saudi and Russia get together and do this completely unnecessary move simply to hurt America. Good for them. That's called capitalism. If Biden wants to sell off the entire SPR to get a couple of years of positive ratings, which he didn't even get, well, look what he gets for it. We're completely vulnerable. And that was the total goal of this. And look at this. Interest rates are soaring at the same time oil prices are soaring because everyone knows there's nothing the Fed can do about it. That's what this is about. And by the way, look who else joined the party. Argentina, who's about to have a Bitcoiner as president. And of course, Iran is going to toe the line when it comes to hurting us with oil sanctions. So this is a very big deal, but not about a new currency. The only new currency we're going to see is going to be Bitcoin.
There you go. That is a good reminder there. Again, I pointed that there's going to be no new currency at all. It's a way for them to do their thing, to avoid the U.S., to put the middle finger up at the U.S. We'll see how it all works between all these countries, though. Again, another big announcement from their meeting was that they added these six new countries, which is interesting picks indeed. There's reasons for all of them, and there are people out there that are like, oh, you people are just ripping on the BRICS because it's brown people standing up against colonialism. Dudes, have you ever been to Argentina? That is where the Nazis went to hide. Okay, it is whiter than the United States of America. All right. I mean, it is what it is. So don't break everybody breaking this down to racial nonsense. It's so tribal to do something like use your freaking brains, people, or actually like travel around the world and stuff.
It's about Saudi and Iran. They're the ones that matter because they know, along with Russia, that we are completely vulnerable in the energy world, completely vulnerable. And that's how they're choosing to attack us. It's that simple.
Anything else to add? Or someone was about to say something.
Yeah, no. Adam, I was just going to say real quick that's one reason why we've got to open up the spigots for oil and natural gas and nuclear here in the United States. I mean, I think all those things are going to be crucial when you think about electricity and...
Jitsi just cut him off. They didn't want to hear that. No.
Wait. You're still there, aren't you?
No, he's gone.
that sounded like a Texan right there, man. Drill that oil, build that nuke. Come on.
That's what you get for joining.
That's what you get. Texas Grant. They didn't
they cut me off.
Joe Biden is listening.
keep going. What you were saying.
No, I was just saying, I think that's going to be a recipe for success and prosperity for the future. That way we can be more independent. I mean, there's this quote about where we – oil production or petroleum independent. And that really just means that, you know, we were not importing as much. I mean, we're still going to import some because all the refineries down along the Gulf Coast that refine the oil into gas, they're retrofitted for the thick, dirty oil that comes really from the Middle East, not the light, sweet crude that's mostly across the United States. And most people or most companies don't want to build new refineries because of what? All the regulations. Yeah. It's very costly to do so. So we're going to have to import some to get the gas. But there's so much other things that we could be doing right now that could allow for us to have, you know, lower oil prices, lower gas prices, really help the consumer in the process. And that would be by producing more. I should say, though, that oil production per day went up recently. I think it was last week, to the highest level since the pandemic. So we're almost back to where we were before. And which is interesting because there's a lot fewer rigs. They're getting a lot more oil. They're being more efficient. Imagine that with the dollars they have or with the production that they have. And it's going to be something that we want to watch. Uh-oh, it looks like we lost Adam now. So
yeah, Jitsi is really tripping out. Yeah.
Yeah.
I fell off 10 minutes ago myself.
Okay. Yeah, I saw you drop off there. But yeah, so I think that, you know, this is another area that's going to need to be considered. And you're right, Andy. I mean, that's why Iran and all these others are really important right now because of the oil production that's going on.
Okay. Until Adam comes back, I can stand in. We had some other topics to talk about. And so I think we were going to talk about real estate. Oh, is Adam? Yeah. Oh,
okay. I don't know.
Yeah. Everyone's going to fall off. Andy's next.
Yeah.
New computer. It's actually pretty good for the first time. So you all have to get new computers.
You're like, something's weird there, Vance. Everything you say is getting us kicked off.
I know.
That is weird, man. Keep going.
Well,
there.
I said my piece. I don't know if you want to get into some of the property tax stuff.
Well, we're going to get a second. Ulrich, did you have anything to add to this ramp real quick?
No, I think I'm good on that one.
We're going to go be power users now and get through all this stuff. I said we talk about Elon Musk in the title, so we got to. Weaponizing, the government is clearly weaponizing itself against dissenters. They're going after him, and they have a vendetta, I guess, because they don't like Twitter. And now they're saying that he needs to be looked into because he didn't hire enough foreigners for his space program. It's crazy. I don't know if anyone has any a take on that.
I can go first. Generally speaking, again, when the government tries to intervene, especially this current administration, it's the government is turning into basically a personal weapon for the president. You can see how many times Trump has been attacked while Biden has been sitting president. Not to say that I'm like this full-on Trump supporter, but Trump lost and you can move on and go make this country better like you said you would, rather than reaching back into the past and bothering with a person that essentially lost the election. But no, we have Trump arrested or almost arrested 4 times in 3 years. So now you have this one with Elon Musk. Musk has said too many things bad about the current administration. He doesn't like it. When Biden was trying to talk about e-vehicles maybe 2 years ago, he was talking about how Ford and GM were leading the way. And of course, forgot to mention the only e-vehicle that actually works consistently, which is Tesla. So this just turning, you know, it's a petty stance by a petty administration. And you can only hope that by end of 2024, we have something better.
Oh, yeah, it's again, this is economic fascism, right? When you're picking winners and losers, you don't have to like Elon Musk, and that the Andy doesn't like Elon Musk very much. And I'll let Andy speak about it now. But this is blatant, in your face government weaponization. I mean, this is unprecedented, really. I mean, they're just picking on someone they don't like, and people, and they know they can get away with it because people hate billionaires so much. Like, oh yeah, he deserves it. Let's target him. So Andy, your take.
I look at this a little different than others because, yes, of course, attacking people, whatever. But you know, part of it is though that I really don't think the world needs Twitter or X or whatever. I really don't think it matters. And I honestly think that Elon Musk is one of the worst charlatans that America's ever seen. I think he's going way back, the shady deals he's done and the cold following of people who followed him down the drain in so many of his ventures. Dogecoin is just one of the many things. Look at the value of Teslas that are collapsing right now. Look, I mean, there's so many things that he's done. I don't even frankly believe a lot of these other things he's doing are really necessary. But I think he's caused as much damage, you know, as good. And I really don't care about the guy. But that's my take, honestly.
All right. And again, this is they're suing SpaceX here. So it's it's crazy. Dr. Vanskin.
Yeah, it's interesting. I happen to agree some with Andy. Like, I don't think these things should matter as much in our lives as people give them credit for. I'm on Twitter, or X, as I should say, and try to spread the information that's out there and have a good time of learning from you all and others that are out there and seeing what's happening. But, you know, the average person isn't really care about this stuff, and they're not looking at it every day. However, with Elon Musk, you know, I think he's done a lot of important things to drive innovation and everything else. You know, there's talk about how much money he has and everything else, but I mean, he's transformed the world in a lot of ways too with what he's doing. I'm all about entrepreneurs and doing whatever they're going to do. Let the market work. It's a problem whenever government starts stepping in the way and having one lawsuit after another or everything or something else. Or remember back in the day where the Congress would bring up all the oil executives to come and talk about why oil prices are so high without looking at themselves first and saying, what are we doing wrong? And a lot of times I see that today where government's just getting in the way. And this is another way for them to do it whenever they can't do it through higher taxes or higher regulations right away. Let's just put them through the ringer by bringing them to court as much as possible and spend a lot of money on court cases.
It's again the continuation of the government vilifying entrepreneurs. I am not a fan of, and I'm gonna promote entrepreneurs. I love it. It's the ultimate not relying on the government is being just start not relying on anyone but your darn self. Personal responsibility is the new counterculture. All right, real estate, real quick. We're gonna talk about
one more thing. I will say positive in Elon's defense. Yes, absolutely. This is more Atlas Shrugged stuff. He's a Henry Reardon.
Yep.
And they are, you know, they're going to drive him out. They drove him out of California, and soon they'll just drive him out of America. And they'll drive all the people who are productive out of America if they do that. It's that simple.
Yeah, well, that's what we're at this point. It's well, it's some of these guys are just they just grin and they take it. I mean, they've stuck around. Plenty of rich dudes have stuck around California. And they just, I guess they like the 50%, 60% of taxes they're getting or what. I mean, that's what it adds up to for some of these dudes. Okay, now let's talk real estate quick. One thing that I've said through the years, and it's just increased lately, like why own real estate is a pain in the tuchus. Why not just own the Bitcoin is the best asset to own because you can take it with you. Real estate, you are tied down. You never know when your jurisdiction is always going to make some weird new rule that's going to tax you more. And by the way, much credit to Vanskin in Texas, trying to get rid of property taxes in Texas. That would make Texas the freaking best state to live in, no doubt, if that dream came true. Airbnb, you know, laws in New York City restricting people what they could do with their property in terms of Airbnb. It is crazy. And once you own real estate, it's hard to leave. It is really hard to leave. So people do talk about, and again, some real estate can be good, I guess. But I mean, God, does it, Lord, Bitcoin does beat it in every aspect. And it's just, it's becoming worse and worse because real estate is a very easy target. It's, you can't take it with you. So these, we were talking about power hungry bureaucrats beforehand. Well, it's a big old target for power hungry bureaucrats. So Andy, you were the one who originally brought up real estate to me. What do you have to say?
Yes. You know, it's like, I was just showing the tweet that I put out yesterday. Like if I see one more person say that real estate is stuck because everyone wants to keep their 3% mortgage, because they don't want a 7% mortgage. It's like, no, it's stuck because no one can afford to buy a house. And that's why prices are going to collapse way worse than 2008. They've had a way bigger rise, people don't realize, than they did in 2006-07 on way worse fundamentals. And now we have way more debt. And, you know, look at the interest rates hitting now. I think it's a 15-year high. They're not coming down. We're going to see a dramatic, dramatic decline in real estate, just like we're going to see a dramatic decline in all the assets that are leveraged and all the people who are leveraged. And it's very sad. The Fed created this, having the reserve currency and having the, you know, kicking the can down the road for as long as they have. They've reached the end. And that's a big part of what BRICS just did. They said, we're going to attack oil because that's a big way of starting the ball rolling downhill. And, you know, I feel terrible for people who have mortgages because they're all going to have to sell. And, you know, who owns all the houses now? All the big businesses, like the, you know, this is what RFK was talking about, the Blackstones and all them. So this is going to be another really, really tragic chapter for the country. And if you're out of debt, then God bless you. And if you're not, you're going to be in for a lot of pain in the next few years.
If you own commercial real estate, that wasn't the Fed that screwed commercial real estate. That was the lockdowns. Now, forever and ever, not as many people are going to have to work in city cores. Sure, they're coming back. Some of them, 90%. It's never going to be 100% of what it once was. And I don't know how anyone could be buying commercial real estate right now. I'd be jumping ship from that Titanic real quick and turning it into Bitcoin. And by the way, Ulrich pointed out to me, and I guess he'll talk about this in a second, that yeah, renting is cheaper than owning right now. I'm doing pretty well for myself. I'm renting, and it's great. And you don't have to worry about all this nonsense. You can just pick up and leave if you want to. I love Airbnb, et cetera, et cetera. Real estate, Dr. Vanskin, your take. Anything you want to say about it?
Yeah, I know. I think this is some key points that are being made. You do have this kind of lock-in effect where people have high, you know, low interest rates that they had over the last couple of years. And with interest rates going up, I mean, you could sell, but then where are you going to buy? And then how much is your monthly payment going to be? Can you afford that? You know, a lot of people move because they want to, well, for one, they want to flee oppressive states but California. So many of them are moving to Texas. You know, we've got a net immigration in Texas of 1,000 people per day. And one of the issues that I've been looking at for real estate is how do we actually own our own home again or own our home? When you're paying property taxes, you're renting from the government forever. You never can own your own home. You can pay off all your entire mortgage, even if it's a higher interest rate or something else, but you're still going to be paying those property taxes. And what's happening to a lot of low-income people across the state of Texas and a lot of other, you know, pretty much every state, is that the lower-income people, millennials and Gen Zers, are getting screwed. They're getting screwed by the higher interest rates, but also the property taxes, because it keeps them from being able to buy that home, enter into the market. And then a lot of the folks that are, especially in senior citizens on fixed income, their property taxes per year or per month are more than their mortgage was and escrow and everything else back in the day, and they can't afford it. And they're losing their home. They're losing their legacy. And so some of them have really thought of this as an investment to save for a rainy day and really get out of this and give to their family. They can't do this anymore. And it's a travesty. And it's one of the things, the impediments that I like to see get out of the way is for people, you know, for local governments and states to eliminate property taxes. Texas has a constitutional amendment prohibiting a personal income tax, which is great. We never should have a personal income tax because it disincentivizes work. Right. And also we have a prohibition on a statewide property tax. So there's no statewide property taxes in Texas. They're all local. But the school district's property tax is essentially run by the state legislature through their school finance formulas and everything. And so what I've said is look, state, start spending less and use surplus money to buy down that school and middle property tax until it's zero. And all the cities and counties and special purpose districts spend less and use surplus money to buy down your property taxes until they're zero, and we'd have all property taxes eliminated. I've also looked at other options of like broadening the sales tax base, because there's a lot of sales tax items that are excluded, exempted in the market. So if you broaden the sales tax base, you could eliminate the school M&O property tax, the school district property tax in Texas, without raising the rate. Just saying, look, we're not going to pick winners and losers in the sales tax, have the broadest base with the lowest rate possible, and you can eliminate half the property tax in Texas tomorrow. We just need the political will to do it. And there was actually talk, Adam, about doing that this year. There was a regular session and two special sessions in Texas, and the governor's first two special sessions were dealing with property taxes, where he actually said, let's eliminate the school M&O property tax. They didn't end up doing that at the end of the day. They provided $12.7 billion in property tax relief, which is pretty substantial, right? The largest, it's the second largest in Texas history, probably the largest across the nation, but you're still looking at a huge amount of property taxes that are coming out. And last thing here is some people will say, well, look, Texas has a high property tax because they don't have an income tax. Yeah. And that's not true. If you look at other states that don't have an income tax, like Florida, so Texas has the sixth most burdensome property tax on homeowners, according to the Tax Foundation. Florida has the 26th. So they're right in the middle and they don't have an income tax. And Tennessee has the 36th because they don't have a school property tax. They just have it, you know, they pay through it through the state funds. And so this is baloney. Really what it's about is excessive government spending at the local level in Texas. We're really blueberries in a sea of red. Okay, in Texas, you got Austin and Houston, Dallas. They're spending out the wazoo, and so they raise their property taxes to pay for it. And in Tennessee and Florida, they've done a better job of limiting spending at the local level and not jacking up those property taxes. And I don't really want us to have Proposition 13 like they do in California, because I know that limits it per year, but it also locks people in their home, because why do you want to sell? That reduces the supply of homes that are on the marketplace, driving prices higher up. So now prices are higher, and you're going to have to pay higher property taxes when you buy that new home. Yeah, that to me, that's not a good scenario. But those are some of the things that I've been working on here in Texas and across the country.
You've got a good take. I mean, what you said about senior citizens and, you know, owning a house for a long time, and now the property taxes are more than what they used to stash away to make the monthly payment on the house itself.
Yes.
That just shows how evil the freaking government is. It just shows you that inflation is real. That yep. right there. I mean, that is a good, I mean, that issue right there, that would get some support from the people to force the government to fix this situation, because that is pathetic. That is so sad that it's come to that. That the government, the rent you pay to the government, which is so unnecessary, is more than what you were originally paying for the house in payments. It's disgusting. Yep.
That's why the Texas secession thing is not completely unreal. I mean, Ron Paul brought up a long time ago, but a state like Texas is self-sufficient, and you wonder what will happen down the road.
Nullification first.
It's interesting you brought that up. I don't know if that'll happen, but we'll see. But this week was Sam Houston's birthday, and so they celebrated that and everything here in Texas. And you know, he was the first and third president of the Republic of Texas back in the 1830s and early 1840s before they joined the Union in 1845.
They really have Texas pride, man. They learn their state history. They learn in California too, pretty much from what I heard. Speaking of California. Ulrich, what's your take on what we've been talking about? I'm sure you have something to say.
I do.
Real estate and renting and all that.
Yeah, you know, I think the example of commercial real estate is normally a leading indicator for residential. And in terms of my own local example, the WeWork building right across the street from where I work is a wasteland. And they're like, and it's a big old tall build, or they own most of the building, and they're probably going to be selling soon, which is so ironic because they got a movie on Netflix out last year. Like there's some sort of great, you know, business model. And then my own company as well. I'll be honest, no one's in the office. You know, 10% of the people who have to be one of those people is me, but we have 10% of our entire company there. It's just people are working from home. And so like commercial real estate is a leading indicator of residential. But Thomas Sowell, a great economist, he said that contrary to the vision of the left, it was a free market which produced affordable housing before government intervention made housing unaffordable. And we see all these policies, we see all these taxes and how they've completely mutated what it is to own a home. And for millennials to trust their government, that for millennials that actually trust their government, is kind of like a hard pill to swallow. That the government is actually the chief culprit of this phenomenon that we're witnessing in real time, this accelerating ownership cost to rental cost. And wage, it's primarily the wage earners that have been left in the dust. You know, asset owners, people who own property to get to make their lives what it is, they're okay. But the wage earners, the day-to-day people, they're left in the dust. They complain that they're poor, that meat is high, eggs are high, houses are high. But if you tell them the money is poison, they'll dismiss that notion because they love the narrative is so coddling of no, it's not the government's fault. It's not the elite's fault. It's not the Cantillon effect. They're going to blame private companies. They're going to do all this kind of stuff, this Bernie Sanders dystopia that they think will heal all their wounds. But this all happened in 1971 when we went off the gold standard. And not to say that gold is the answer, because we know that we can't trust it. We know that it falls short. But in my opinion, that gold is a pointer to something that is an indicator of how an economy should be run. Austerity, like Vance was mentioning, but at the same time, transparency, decentralization, a true hard cap on a monetary system, all these things Bitcoin provides. And Bitcoin will demonetize the housing market. And I think if we were to go onto a Bitcoin standard, we'll see that houses, plenty of rational use cases fleshed out where houses just lose their appeal as an investment vehicle. And it becomes, and the value of the house goes back to its utility value, which essentially equivalency from a buying perspective probably takes us back to the 1950s from a housing affordability standpoint. And that's a good thing.
I just want to say with how everybody, George Bush, everybody hypes up housing. I mean, all sorts of leftists thinks it's a great solution to get everybody free. You've got a silent partner, all sorts of silent partners when you own a house. When you own a Bitcoin, it's just you. Only you own it. You don't have to worry about somebody taking it away from you or anything like that. That is my final reminder on real estate. We're going to get to our final subjects right now. I just want to remind everybody real quick. I talked about Argentina before. You should visit Argentina. You should visit South Africa. I like those countries a lot in the BRICS. I don't want to like people say, oh, you're a hater of Argentina or something like that. It could have been interpreted that way. I love Argentina. Out of all the BRICS, that's my favorite. That's my favorite one of the BRICS plus six right now is Argentina. And I hope to visit the UAE next year. By the way, everybody, link to below, discount code to the Las Vegas Unconfiscatable event in it's Meister something. What is it? Meister 10. You can get to Tone's event in December for cheaper if you use that. Let's just talk about drive chains real quick. And then drive chains real quick. Since we got,
are you going to speak at Unconfiscatable?
Huh?
Are you going to speak at Unconfiscatable?
Who knows? No, I don't have anything for, they just, in the middle of the event, they're like, hey, you're introducing this dude. So I'll be on stage at some point. You never know what you're going to get.
You should be the keynote.
Who knows? They can do whatever they want. I'd be willing to speak. Last minute, if they need me there, I'd do it. I don't care. It's so fun. It's so laid back. It's awesome, dudes. I'm the energy man. They put me on stage sometimes there to get. I'm like, yeah, baby, I'm happy to be in Vegas. It works.
Hype. The hype man, right?
I am the hype man. Definitely. I'm Flavor. Nice. All right, Flavor Flav, Adam Meister. Let's drive chains real quick. It's a soft fork proposal in Bitcoin so that you'll be able to do all this altcoin-y type of stuff on Bitcoin and miners will be able to make money off of it. That's a very simple explanation. When we have these soft forks, like with Taproot, they look good, they're cool, but you never know what might sneak in there. Some people are angry at Taproot because of all the inscriptions that have come about because of it. I thought that Taproot would be a warning, an ossification promoter that people would be scared to do more soft forks. And I think that's positive. I don't like change. I think Bitcoin just being a way to get around the government, the best money out there, unconfiscatable. It's very simplistic stuff for people. I think that's what's awesome. I don't think it needs to be complicated. I linked to an article below about, you know, some of the scenarios that could be bad if they actually implemented these, implemented this change, this soft fork that would allow drive chains, side chains, whatever you want to call it. The bottom line is this, is that there's always going to be a group of people that are fudding on Bitcoin and say it needs to be better. We need this chains. We need the miners to make more money. Every 4 years I hear about, we need the miners to make more money. Let's have more Bitcoin. Let's expand the block size. Let's do this. Let's do that. They're all, these things are going to keep on coming up. You can make your own mine if Bitcoin really needs this soft fork, or if some people are just promoting it so that eventually there's going to be a hard fork where there's more than 21 million Bitcoin, because we got to satisfy the miners. Mining FUD, tail end emissions FUD. Dudes, if you've been in this game long enough, you've seen it all. For me, it's more noise. I don't support it. I don't think it's the end of the world if it happened, but you never know what other things a soft fork is. It might look really cool. I don't see a reason why Bitcoin has to be, have altcoins on Bitcoin or whatever it is, all this other stuff. You know, go play with altcoins then. Ulrich, your take.
Yeah, and generally speaking, the people who make this this drive chain, they have, their whole premise is that Bitcoin must rely on cash and banking to have tangible value. And I think we long put that to bed, that Bitcoin doesn't need a bank to justify its worth. Every year it stands more so on its own, regardless of what the fiat world thinks. We're in a price discovery phase, which means that we're all trying to figure out how much Bitcoin is going to be worth in the future. And every new asset goes through a volatile price discovery phase. So the idea that these people think that we need to be connected to the traditional finance world is asinine, in my opinion. One of the major things that I noticed is that the withdrawal process from a sidechain takes 3 to 6 months to clear. So imagine you going to your bank and they're saying, talk to us next major national holiday, or go take a calculus course and then come back and talk to us to get your money back. In my opinion, that's a scam. You can lock up your money in Ethereum and do the same thing. I could, if I wanted to test out things with what my crypto money could do, I might as well just pull out, sell Bitcoin and go to Algorand. I think what it boils down to is that there are altcoiners out there that are looking for ways to fill a potential gap. They're seeing a gap. What I mean by gap is a gap to illicit value. If they can somehow create an altcoin atmosphere on Bitcoin, then altcoiners will come in to use their product and therefore line their own pockets with venture capital money. I think it's a grift. It's a scam. They don't want to go use these altcoin networks because they're already there and they're trying to basically they're capitalists, and I understand they're trying, but Bitcoin is too decentralized. It has too good foundational principles to be led astray by some affinity scam grift. And right, it's gonna be banned.
All right. Andy, I don't know. Now that you've got a little bit more info on this, do you have any take on it, or do you not care?
Yeah, no, I get it now completely. Look, it's, first of all, it's not going to happen. First of all, the fact that no one even really knows to see a thing even exists. I think I saw one tweet, like Corey Clipston was responding, that I even knew the word drive chain was even being discussed. I didn't even know it was a soft fork. The deal with Bitcoin is it's completely FUD free forever. And that includes Binance collapsing, right? No one cares. That's why none of the Bitcoin's moving. No one is selling and no one is worried about any of these things. There's been two soft forks. Maybe there was something way, way back when. There's been two soft forks in Bitcoin's history that I'm aware of. One was SegWit, which was probably the most important event in Bitcoin history. We all know how much it was needed and how much it changed. It made Bitcoin what it is. And Taproot was universally understood to be a benefit to Bitcoin, in simplifying the language and making it easier to use. And that got in. And I think that's the last soft fork we'll ever see. I don't think this is even going to even become an issue. And certainly not, you know, like what Ulrich is saying, of course, it's just people trying to just make money on a grift, but it certainly has nothing to do with Bitcoin. It's never going to happen.
You make a really good point there, Andy, that of all the people that touch Bitcoin on this planet, what percentage actually know about this controversy? I mean, it is what percentage of people actually care or know about this aspect of it? People in the Twitter in our Twitter universe do make bigger deals out of some stuff. But again, and it isn't like a small deal either. I'm not going to say if it actually happened, but it's not like there's that much of a demand for this right now either among the people who really deal with Bitcoin. So I'll leave it at that. I think the FUD aspect, where I think my point about we've been through different flavors of this before.
Yeah, look at ordinals. Like, how long did that last? A month? Like, it died that quickly.
But I get people just the fear mongering that's out there. It comes and goes, guys. If you have a truly strong hand, you can deal with any of it. Just go with the flow. Never panic over it. All right, now we're at the end of the show, so let's just start with anything that I left off. Anything anyone wants to add? Everybody is linked to below all their personal projects. Talk about it. We'll start with Dr. Vanskin. What do you got to say?
Hey, Adam. It was great to talk with y'all today, and I look forward to the next one that we do, maybe next month or something, in a couple of weeks. It was a great discussion today, a lot of key things that are happening. On my Let People Prosper Show podcast, I've had some good guests on recently talking about this sort of issues, also antitrust issues with Hannah Cox and some other folks. I have some other good ones coming up here in the upcoming weeks, so be sure to check that out wherever you get your platforms. And my Substack is advancedskin.substack.com. Where you can also get that information. Be looking out for the end of the month. The government spending, the budget is expiring. And so there's going to be a lot of hoopla about whether or not they should cut the budget or not. They won't. They'll kick the can down the road and make these issues that we've talked about today even worse. You know, government is the problem. It's not the solution. We need more markets, like something like Bitcoin. I think that would be good. So we got a lot to talk about. I learned from y'all just right now too. I didn't know about this. What did you call it? Drop chain or?
Yeah.
Drop chain. It's a Bitcoin improvement protocol number 300.
Got it.
I.e. a scam.
Yeah. Yes. So you are educating me in the process too. So I appreciate it.
Vance, it's interesting that you bring it. I wish we had more time. We don't, but I could go on and on about government shutdowns. I would love for there to be a government shutdown. It just shows how the people, they hear the word and they think, oh, it's horrible. The government workers won't be working. It's great when they're not working. Look what happened during that was the only good thing that came out of the pandemic. They didn't work and it was great. We didn't have people up our tuchuses bothering us and stuff, wasting all our money. Big Sean Harris, thank you for the $2, dude. He was on the show. Check out the archives. He was on a recent show. Ulrich, what do you think about what are your things you want to talk about real quick? Yourself, everything.
Yeah, so I'm still pressing forward with my Belt of Truth Substack, which is a Bitcoiner Christian collaborative platform where Christian Bitcoiners can talk about, you know, how Bitcoin's impacting them and how their walk with Christ impacts them being a Bitcoiner. I think we have 6 published articles with and 4 total contributors. So I expect that number to grow, and I expect it to be hopefully edifying to its readers. Additionally, next month when Pacific Bitcoin happens, I plan to have the Declaration of Monetary Independence there, a new design, a new layout where people can come take pictures, sign their name on the declaration, and celebrate our gradual separating money from state. And of course, the Bitcoin ballers that we have every other week, or now with the basketball season, every week with Q, like the letter, formerly from Bitcoin Magazine. And we talk about nothing but basketball, but we just happen to be Bitcoiners.
Oh, yeah. And by the way, guys, 1995 on this date was Cal Ripken's 2131. 2131. Remember, those of you who know what that means, the streak, it was a beautiful, beautiful thing. That's what I was alluding to before. Andy, probably remember. Andy, you can kind of learn.
Yes. Well, again, this was a really good show, and I would just advise people, if possible, to get out of debt and get as much Bitcoin as possible. It's inevitable that that we are going to have the financial crisis that's been long awaited. It's probably going to be very soon. And it's also inevitable that Bitcoin is going to take over the world's financial system.
Dude, that's a positive way to end it. And yeah, I love the panel again. You got, we'll have the panel return again soon enough. We got the high holidays coming up. We got Andy Hoffman's birthday coming up. So, you know, we'll all be busy real soon. I got a bat mitzvah in Baltimore this weekend. So I will be in Baltimore. Nice. For those of you who know that kind of stuff, it'll be interesting. And Rosh Hashanah and everything. But we'll be back. So guys, give me your feedback on the format of the show in the comments. You can DM me. I'm at TechBalt, TechBalt. And everybody have a Shabbat Shalom. Have a great weekend. Great rest of the time. Whatever you're going to be doing. I'll see some of you at the bat mitzvah that are watching or not watching, right? So I'll see you at the bat mitzvah, obviously. All right. So everybody, I'm Adam Meister. Thank you, Meister. Subscribe to the channel. Pound that like button. See you guys.
Later.
Bye, good one.
All right. Ending the stream. Okay, cool.
We did it.
Yeah, we